T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Molly and Hall.
We're trying to wake Chicago up.
Live at 5 on 670 The Score.
And here they come.
Mike Trout has got some Mickey Mantle to him, minus the knee injury and the booze.
He's got some Mickey Mantle to him. He's got some Willie Mays to him. He's right. Got every great right. That you want to attach, and you see a trait in Mike Trout. It applies. He is that good, and that's not an exaggeration, and that's not a response to him getting a $430 million contract. If he were getting paid the same as he was yesterday or last year, he'd have the same response. This is one of the all-time great center fielders and all-time great outfielders.
Would he have gotten more on the open market?
Probably yes, depending on when he would hit the open market. But you would have to think.
2 more years, right? Yeah, had he not signed this deal?
You have to think he'd be in the $500 million range in the open market. The Angels have a payroll that's the fifth highest in baseball. They haven't won a playoff game with Mike Trout.
Because they haven't spent the money very well. Albert Pujols, train wreck, right? Josh Hamilton, train wreck. And now this is a good one because we know who the guy is.
I think this is the one that you look at and you think, I understand why you would be willing to risk paying him $36 million at the tail end of this contract. He's just entering his prime, as absurd as that sounds, for a guy who's been the MVP already twice.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall.
Your morning guy over there.
Mornings on The Score.
Chuck Garfine has some possible news about Eloy Jimenez. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, guys. The big news here before the game has even begun is that the White Sox are reportedly close to a deal in signing Eloy Jimenez to a long-term extension that would have him ready to be with the club on opening day in Kansas City.
Wow, that's good.
Molly Hall.
I'm so fired up.
Here we go.
Molly and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And it is a glorious and wondrous morning in the fine city of Chicago.
Good morning, Molly.
How are you, Mr. David?
I'm
pretty
doing
excited.
Well. Yeah, March Madness indeed for the White Sox fan.
Yes, Eloy, locked down. This is the guy, this is the long-term Chicago baseball star that we've all been waiting for.
Where were you when you
heard
that?
You don't have to worry about whether he needs a new deal. You don't have to worry about when you want to bring him in. Oh, it's just fantastic.
Well, they've got to bring him up now, right, for opening day?
That creates
the excitement level.
You don't have to wait.
He's got to be in the lineup on opening day. There's no defense to pretend like he's working on at Charlotte. There's no service time you have to preserve. He's got his contract.
That's right.
Sox have their guy, and the fans
have
their
guy
way.
Pretty good deal. Pretty good deal.
There's no doubt about it. This is a deal. So
you bought out the arbitration years, and then you turn around. And
reports are 8 years with the potential, with it includes two club options. It can get up to $77.5 million, $43 million apparently guaranteed.
Yeah.
This is – Rick Hahn did it again. I mean, Rick Hahn did it again, really, because when you look at the way the White Sox have approached young stars before they become bigger stars,
yes,
and they lock them into long-term deals.
Sound financial management. Yep.
This is a team-friendly deal, and it may go down as one of the biggest steals in Sox history, because if he is as good as they believe he can be – then by the middle of this deal, you're going to be looking at what he's making and saying, wow, how did we manage that?
Yeah, it should be, here's hoping. Here's hoping that. I understand what I'm saying. I believe that the White Sox, he has been with them long enough for them to understand exactly who he is. They know the upside. They know the downside. They know a lot. They have a lot of information about him. And when you make a decision like this, while there is the guy hasn't played a major league game yet, and there is a difference in a projection for a young player versus seeing a guy that's doing it. But if you are right, and again, you've got all the information, you got more information on him than anybody else in baseball. If you are right in your projection of him, then this is a fantastic deal. If it doesn't work out, it's not a killer. It's not something that sets the program back. It would set the program back if the player himself isn't what they believe he is, because they need him to be sort of the base.
He's the center of this.
Yes, he is.
He's
the cornerstone
of
the rebuild. He really needs to be
He's got to be the guy that succeeds.
And if he doesn't, though, this doesn't set them back as far as you would believe. But, I mean, obviously the setback would be just as bad because of what the player represents as the cornerstone.
Financially, it wouldn't be a disaster.
Exactly.
But morale-wise, it would be. And it would cost people jobs. And it would redirect careers. If Eloy Jimenez is not as good as everybody thinks that he is, there's going to be a big change on the South Side because he is at the center of this. There's no question about it. Look, you can identify other people as far as being important to the rebuild, but this has always been about when he arrives is sort of the clock restarts, correct?
No question about it.
So when he's here on opening day, then you're like, okay, we can really pay attention now and watch his development because this guy is exciting. And if he continues this progression that you've seen at every level of domination through minor league baseball, now that's why this spring has stood out. He hasn't been that guy.
Exactly.
Whether it's because this negotiation was going on.
Well, he said that it had to do with him pressing.
Well, maybe he was pressing because this negotiation was going on, because you get the inkling that this has been the last 30 days or so that they've been discussing this, and maybe that weighed on him.
Do you believe that if they had gotten Manny Machado, this deal doesn't get done?
That's a really good question. I don't think there would be the urgency to get it done.
Yeah.
I don't want to answer a question with another question, because I'll answer this one first. I don't think it gets done now. Don't think they would have had to felt like they were compelled to get this done before opening day, because I do feel there's an urgency that they look at. They want to get this done before opening day.
I think they want to have a star. I think in lieu of Manny Machado, hey, have you met Eloy? Oh, he's going to be fantastic. I think they need that. They need a reason for people to come out. I know spring training doesn't matter. I know that it's just a glimpse at different people and a projection itself, but kind of a snapshot of where a team is. But they didn't look particularly good in spring training this year.
It's not been great, no.
It hasn't been overwhelming and doesn't lead you to believe that they're not going to lose 100 games. So they need a reason to believe. You need a reason for people to go out there. And I think, you know, if Yoan Moncada can get his career back to where they need it to be. And you know, I'm not saying his career is completely off the rails or anything, but they've moved him to a position where he won't have to worry about the defensive stuff. Third base it's third base.
It's a big year for him.
The ball comes at you and you react to it, and that's about all you can do. It's a big year for him. It's a big year. Tim Anderson has shown growth. They obviously use this same strategy with Tim Anderson. So you want the feeling coming out of this season that you're building towards something, that you're seeing some of the effect of the rebuild.
We'll get into this a lot more later, but I want to ask you this now. By the same token, if they weren't as transparent about their pursuit for Manny Machado, and if they weren't as open about what they were going to do and how much they would change if they got him, would you feel that void that needed to be filled by this contract extension with Eloy? Because
so their acknowledgement of the void is it underscores the void.
I wonder if you would feel differently as a Sox fan, because everything else about the rebuild really has been the same since the end of last year. This arrow is still pointing up based on the prospects, based on guys like Jimenez, like, you know, okay, they've had the injury setbacks, Dane Dunning.
But more than any other,
the talent that is young and going to be developed, would you still feel like the momentum was going in a positive direction if you weren't punched in the gut by the Machado disappointment?
Well, I think the problem with the problem if they hadn't pursued Machado is that, you know, the Cubs have an excuse. They went out and they signed all these guys and the payroll is higher than it's ever been. I don't know that they could get away with not pursuing free agents given the amount of money that they were spending on the team. So even if they had done a deal like this without Machado, you'd still feel like they were being cheap. The fact that they pursued Machado, it made you feel like they're ambitious. They see what we see.
Yep.
And the fact that they were honest about it, you know, you could be disappointed. I understand what you're saying. Is this disappointment something you have to rally from? But while you're disappointed, there's also a feeling that it wasn't a flim-flam act, that they actually did pursue the guy. They did want the guy. They just couldn't pull it off. And you don't walk away feeling like, I'm not a fan of the cheapest team in baseball.
Right. That's a good way to put it. But I do believe there's a public relations element to this, in that this changes the subject immediately. This creates a sense of excitement that didn't exist.
You sort of
was sucked out of you from a Sox fan perspective, and now you've got something to rally around. Now you have a cause again, and you've got a prospect that you think is going to be a star. And if he is a star, you just got yourself, from an organizational standpoint, a tremendous bargain.
All right, we're going to get into that. We'll talk about this some more. There's a lot going on in the wide world of sports. This is the day. Today and tomorrow, two of the funnest, best days on the sports calendar. We got the starts of March Madness of the NCAA tournament. I am still...
Your bracket done?
Filling out my bracket.
Oh, stop it.
I am down to two teams.
Okay.
I'm down to one game. One game will decide my bracket. And we'll talk about that next as well, because we're going to give you a sense of all that in the 5 at 5. It's Mully and Haw. Don't dare laugh at me. The bracket's not done yet, and it could change before the tournament begins in earnest today, this morning, when we get off the air. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
5 at 5, brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight, download the new Sport Clips haircut app, and check in.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Who did better in the White Sox contract extension for Eloy Jimenez, the team or the player? What's in it for Eloy, and what's in it for the White Sox?
I think it's a win-win. I think they both get a lot out of it. I think that Eloy gets the money now. They buy out the arbitration years. He gets to come up to the major leagues and begin his career. There's no need to hold him back, and I think that it also sends a good sign to all the young guys. If you're good enough, we're going to pay you. We did it with Tim Anderson. We've done it with Eloy, and now it's your turn. So I think it's a good message that works for the White Sox. As far as the player's concerned, he gets the money now. He doesn't have to wait. He doesn't have to prove anything. And there is a certain amount of guarantee that he has in his life now. He knows that he can take care of the family and all the rest of it. Not that he was really hurting for dough or anything, but this just kind of clarifies who he is in terms of the rebuild. It's goodwill. It's a good thing for him. And in terms of who actually wins, like I said, I think it's good for both of them. It's a great PR move for the White Sox. They get to unveil their bright, shiny object, and everybody can look at it and hopefully come out to the ballpark. And again, I think it also gives them a star, gives them somebody to focus on when the Machado thing went south. So I think it works for the team, and I think it works for the player. Ultimately, who wins will be determined by the career of the player. He could easily out-earn this contract, but if he doesn't, then obviously he won and they lost. But I think that I think it's a good deal for both sides.
But you know what? If he out-earns the contract, both sides win.
Yeah, I agree.
Because
I agree.
The Sox benefit from his success.
No question.
And I think that's the one thing.
But he can't lose out of this thing unless,
he can't, unless
the last 2 years he's underpaid.
So as much as we'll talk about how team-friendly this is, he wins too.
Yes,
this protects him against injury. This protects him against a lot of things. Now, could he have made more throughout the course of this contract by going year to year and getting more arbitration money? Certainly you could make that argument. And I heard it expressed to me yesterday. It was, are you concerned at all that this is Eloy basically saying, I'm not betting on myself and I don't have enough confidence? I don't buy that. If you want to look at the glass half empty, you can do that. I look at it the other way. This is a leap of faith by both sides. Eloy Jimenez, if he is as good as the White Sox expect him to be, this is going to be a bargain for them. But they will also, he benefits from the cost certainty, from the security that a lot of players who have never had their first major league at bat never have had. This is only the third time in major league history that players have signed a contract like this before their first major league before they made the major league debut. You know, with Scott Kingery and John Singleton, the other two examples. This could be a great deal for everyone involved. It certainly has a public relations element, as we mentioned. But if you're a Sox fan, immediately you are excited for opening day. That's what's in it for the Sox. That's what's in it for Jimenez. And the biggest winner in this contract, the Sox fan.
There is zero downside for the White Sox. Extremely team-friendly deal. And for Aloy, there's a little downside, but not a ton. It's really hard to be a superstar, to be the best of the best when you haven't taken a major league at-bat. And potentially, he signs the largest contract in White Sox history before taking that first AB. On the White Sox side, they have somebody to market. They take away a year of free agency. They have a face. Who's the face of the Sox right now? Ricky's boys don't quit last year, right? Because they didn't have anybody else to sell. So that's what they were doing with the manager. So now,
Polka.
Like I said, they didn't have anybody to sell. So, and if he's bad, who cares if you're the White Sox? Because you put in those two club options. So there's absolutely no risk. You don't have to lie to the fan base about going down to Charlotte and working on his defense, getting his swing back. Don't have to do any of that. We're probably going to see him 1 week from right now. And for Aloy, what's the upside? Baseball's business. There's no offseason of dealing with the arbitration stuff.
Right.
Hearing the team say how bad he is in this aspect of
pressure's
of this
off,
game.
Right, Joe?
Absolutely. You don't have to go through this. It's all about baseball. That's the focus. Now, I say little downsides for Jimenez because if he is great, he lost a little bit of money. Because you can make that $70 million mark probably through arbitration if he is a Chris Bryant type player. Yeah, really hard to do. So, I mean, I think it's great for both sides, a little bit better for the White Sox because there was zero downside there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's on the surface definitely a win-win for the organization. This is a player that you clearly think very highly of and that you need to be the centerpiece, the face of the franchise, the guy on the posters, you know, everything that comes with it, you know, not even just in terms of baseball, but in terms of everything that goes along with your franchise. And to have him locked up at such a reasonable price, I mean, reasonable for the team itself because they're valued at like $3 billion. So, of course, they can afford $43 million or $77 million, whatever it ends up being. And for Aloy, you know, a 22-year-old kid coming out of the Dominican Republic who's only been in the United States now for, you know, a handful of years, now he's guaranteed at least $40 million, which is probably going to set him up financially for a really long time. And if he does turn out to be a fantastic player, he's going to have an opportunity to get another payday. So I it's win-win, certainly, in that regard. It's a win for the fans, too. I mean, I think there's an aspect of damage control here that they probably tried to speed this thing along after their failures in the offseason to really bolster the team at all and really garner up any excitement. I think there's a big element of that, and it's not completely cynical to view it that way, but I'm happy that he's going to be on the team for a long time. I expect him to be great. I expect him to hopefully be on the team opening day. I mean, there's no reason for him not to be at this point, and maybe we'll see finally if this can you know, kind of jolt some of these other young players too, maybe the ones that haven't exactly lived up to their potential quite yet. If we see one guy come in and start to just ball out, maybe the others will follow suit.
He has to be on the opening day roster, doesn't he? I mean, isn't that like a must unless there's an injury? Otherwise, I don't get what's going on. And the only reason they might not do that is to say, this is not a PR stunt. This is not what we're doing here. I think it's a win for everybody. I think it's an absolute... It's an absolute win for everybody. And I forget which one of you said it, Mully, I think you did. I think it sends a great message to the younger core. And like, you know, listen, if you do the right things, if you play hard, if you're good on and off the field, you're going to score here. Okay, we're going to take care of our people. You are a White Sox, and we're going to take care of you. So I think that's something that has the potential to like resonate. Okay, and I think it's great for the fans. But I mean, he has to be out there the very first day. He has to be, or I don't get this at all.
before you go with your question, could you embellish on that?
Who's in your Final Four, and who is your pick to win the NCAA tournament? What game are you most looking forward to seeing in the opening round?
I think it's a little early to get too excited about having the first four games right. Would you agree with that? I mean, I'm a little, like, it was giddy last night when I saw that North Dakota State had actually won and Arizona State had won, and I was 4-0! And that's going to end badly today, I know.
These games don't count. This is like spring training, David.
It is spring training. That's why I don't want to get too excited. It's like I'm watching my favorite player hit 450 in spring training and knowing he's just going to strike out four times in the first two games. My Final Four, to restate my bracket, which I filled out Sunday night at 7:15, okay, just for the record.
Quitter.
In ink.
It's weak.
Duke. Quitter. Gonzaga. Purdue. Kentucky. With Duke, the Blue Devils, over the Wildcats in the final. This is Zion's tournament. This is Duke's time. The Dukies. Not sexy pick, but it is the pick because I just don't know how a team with three top five draft picks potentially loses in March. And which game am I most looking forward to? I'm here for Ja Morant and Marcus Howard. I'm here for Marquette and Murray State. That's the game I'm most interested in. So I will be waiting for that one with anticipation.
My bracket isn't done yet. I'm still weighing one game, the key game of the tournament, which is Duke against Michigan State. I've gone back several dozen times. But for the purpose of this, I'm going to declare that Michigan State wins it. I'll have Michigan State over North Carolina in my championship game,
Sparty.
And I've got Texas Tech now beating Michigan, and I got Florida State eliminating the Zags. So I've got Texas Tech, Duke, Tennessee, and North Carolina right now, but that's subject to change. But for the purposes of this question, that's my answer.
I was making changes up until a few minutes ago, entering all sorts of stuff. I'm in something called a bracket list challenge. Like, that's what's great about this. There's many ways to bet these things.
It's so great, Joe, yes, when you find out that you've won some bracket that you didn't remember you had entered.
I had that square. I had no idea. Here's the Final Four. The Final Four is Michigan State, Gonzaga, Virginia, after getting eliminated in the first round a year ago.
Yeah, that's nice.
Great story. They're going to the championship game, too. And just because I have a future on them, I'll take Houston, even though they're not going to win anything. The champion will be Gonzaga taking out Virginia.
Wow.
2-1s going up against it. They have easier paths to get there. What I'm looking forward to the most, it used to be the 12-5 upsets. That was the thing. I think we're past that. There are a bunch of games I can see a 13 or a 14 winning. There's some big-time sleepers. UC Irvine, Northeastern, Yale, Vermont, Old Dominion over Purdue. We'll get to those in just a second. But which big-time double-digit seed, 13 or 14, are going to win today and tomorrow? That's what I'm looking forward to.
Who do you have winning, Joe?
The whole thing?
Yeah.
Gonzaga.
Oh, whoa. The chosen few.
I'll answer the second part of the question first. I'm looking forward to seeing Murray State today, like you, David. Ja Morant is hopefully going to be in a Bulls uniform next season. I'd like to see him make a run, if at all possible. That's a tough matchup, though, with Marquette.
I think Marquette's taking him out.
Yeah, you said that the other day, but I didn't know if you had changed it because you've been altering your bracket so much. So it's good that you checked back
there. He's going to be wrong. Murray State.
I'm also interested in a later game tonight, Seton Hall and Wofford. Not to be confused with Watford from the Premier League, but no, Wofford. And
I'm glad you clarified that because that's what I was thinking.
For our screamers and hollers crossover audience, it's imperative that I do that. And it's important for me that Wofford wins this game because I have Wofford in my Final Four along with Oklahoma, Duke, and Michigan. And I have the Michigan Wolverines winning the national championship.
You have Wofford in the Final Four.
You heard me.
I love it.
That's crazy.
Hey, I won my bracket challenge last year, so I'm going to let it ride, baby.
Well, the question is, have you watched more college basketball or more NHL this year?
I've watched more college basketball, but I've watched more NHL than Wofford basketball, if you want to get specific
that's the thing that stops me. I have no problem with what you're doing.
It sounds like you have a problem
with it. I just wonder, could you give me, what is the Wofford team name?
the Terriers.
Okay, and what's the name of the head coach? Stop reading the screen. He's got it up in front of him.
That's my job, is to look at screens. What do you want about?
I want you to tell me facts about Wofford. What's the name of their conference?
Listen, we got
to
keep it moving, man. It's 5:37.
Throwing darts.
You asked me. I said Terriers. I gave you Mike Young.
Looking at the screen as you repeat yourself.
Get out of here.
All right, so for the final four, you know, if you're going to win one of these brackets, you got to figure out who's going to beat Duke. And so I've got Michigan State beating Duke, but honestly, I could see Michigan State losing to Louisville early on, so that might ruin that. I'm going to go to the other side. I have to agree with Mike DeCourcy. I mean, unfortunately, I think we're going to see Virginia playing in the final four, even though I don't want to see that, but that's what I think because I don't like any of these teams. I think Tennessee could lose to Cincinnati in the second game. From the Midwest, I like North Carolina. Just experience. ACC is really good. They're tested, so I like them. And the bottom left is the hard part. We heard Joe just say Gonzaga. Boy, I think the winner of the Michigan-Nevada game is who's going to come out of that one. I like Nevada. I know they've got one of their starting five is banged up.
Carolina.
But I just like the senior.
They got tons of seniors.
Right? The experience. They had a run last year.
Don't they
right?
have like
obviously,
50 year seniors?
Knocked them out. But did they? I
got
for
the
some reason,
shirtless
like,
coach and his daughter.
Right. This is how you win, and we get to see him shirtless, right?
Oh,
will there be FCC
always.
Complaints about his nipples?
America's really going to cry.
What are you referencing?
50, there were 50.
Janet Jackson.
Even Janet Jackson. Remember the Super Bowl guys? Remember Nipplegate in this year's Super Bowl halftime? 50 FCC complaints about Adam's nipples. I got the moves like Jagger.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah,
50
right.
of them.
I knew he was referencing something more modern.
And I'm also going to have to go with David from a matchup. The game that I want to sit in front of the television set today is the Marquette Murray State, because you got two guys that are lottery picks, and one of those guys might end up here on the west side. So
how crushed is everybody going to be when Florida beats Nevada?
Florida could easily beat them.
It's Florida. Smoke and mirrors. They're not. This is not Billy
smoking
Donovan.
What?
Smoking what?
No, that's the midday show or the. I don't know.
Leave Connor out of this.
Boy, did you hear that transition yesterday?
No, next, but I heard you did.
Next
well,
question.
It was unfortunate because my name was mentioned right before the marijuana overdose or whatever was said on the air.
That's not a real thing.
I had nothing to do with any of that, just to clarify.
The peace pipe.
Oh, boy.
I didn't know there was a problem, that there were so many problems that needed to be solved.
Apparently there's only one thing that solves certain problems.
That's a good question.
So confused.
That's what happens when you don't show up for work, Joe.
Yeah. Have to go back
coming in at 6 o'clock at night already. Trying to get readjusted to the new schedule.
Hey, congratulations Joe. Yeah. That's great stuff. We'll hear more, Joe.
Thank you, Dustin.
Well, I don't
know. We're not really going to get much into that.
Well, you were doing it sarcastically.
I was not.
Oh,
I swear to God.
I said you were. I said you weren't doing it sarcastically.
Oh, I was.
Oh, was you?
I was.
I couldn't tell.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like I haven't been thanked, Joe, for everything that I've done for you. That was a reference to the certain funeral yesterday.
That's a good question.
Now I'm confused.
I did hear that one. Let's move on.
At the end of today's first round, what will be the upset that opens eyes the widest in the NCAA tournament?
You know, here's the problem, is there's going to be one that absolutely blows our minds. And I'm looking through my bracket, and most of my upsets are not today. There's some that are tomorrow. I think that...
Well, set first round, so we...
Yeah,
today or tomorrow.
I know, but I'm just going over the list here.
You're stalling.
Yeah, because I'm still picking my thing. I like Wofford too. I just don't understand if that's a surprise if they beat Seton Hall, mm-hmm. if everyone's picking them. I'll go with Villanova bowing out in the first round. I'll go with St. Mary's actually getting past Villanova, because
that's a good one.
You got the reigning champion, and that guy's a hell of a coach, and it would be a huge upset. But I think St. Mary's might be a little bit better than they've gotten credit for, and I think that Villanova might be a little worse than we realize.
I've got that one, too. That's an 11-6 game. I also have two 12 seeds moving on, Murray State beating Marquette,
And I think the biggest splash may be Liberty. Liberty is a team that that beat Mississippi State. So I have Liberty and Murray State moving on. But I think the biggest one that people will talk about is what we just described. I'm picking Florida to beat Nevada, the trendy pick for the Final Four, the team that we remember from last year's tournament run, and the coach who can go shirtless, but
I'll be happy to file that complaint with the FCC, by the way, if they go to the Final Four.
He's going to be winless in this tournament.
The biggest upset, let's go to the Midwest, the 4-13 matchup. Kansas and future Bulls head coach Bill Self loses in the first round to Northeastern, the 17th best three-point shooting team in the country. So I have Northeastern moving on, but I think we're going to have multiple double-digit seeds make it to the Sweet 16.
You know, I think that Michigan State is a great team, and I think that they probably will make a run, but I think they have to get past Bradley today. I think with all of the crap that was swirling around Bradley with their head coach and the media and all of that, I think the players could maybe use that as some sort of a rallying cry. I mean, Michigan State has been
a stretch,
susceptible at times. You can wait your turn over there. I told you, man. Hey, I won $400 last year. All right, I'm the reigning champion of bracketology.
Was it a square?
Can I get into that? Man, it was a bracket. Into that pool?
No freeloaders. If Bradley can maybe pull off this upset today, it's going to bust quite a few brackets, and everyone's scoffing at me right now. So Ray, mark this time down. 5:43.
It'd be great for the brand if they did.
5:43, Ray. We're gonna have to pull this. Bring this back tomorrow when I'm right, and Bradley beats Michigan State.
Oh God.
Well, here's the real question: if that was to happen, would we then invite the Bradley coach onto the program? That's what I want to know.
No.
I guess not.
It'd be a show meeting.
Show meeting. Group text. There might have to be a peace pipe after we decide.
No peace pipe. No. Wrong.
That was
wrong guy.
That was
sorry.
That was a joke.
Party pooper.
From the upset standpoint, there's a couple here. You know, everybody loves Buffalo, right? That's kind of one of those sexy picks. Buffalo could all of a sudden make it to the Final Four. They could be.
Hey, they're playing their old coach, as
right.
it turns
so
out.
So that's where I'm going with this, Mully. That's where I'm going. So from an upset standpoint, and we also learned, and I didn't realize this, and shame on me for not, that from the play-in game or the first four, whatever you want to call it, we've always had a team advancing to at least the next round. We've always had one winner.
Of them. Yeah.
So with that trend, and I like the trend as your friend, I will take Arizona State to be that shocking bracket busting, everybody's in love with Buffalo type of thing. But, you know, I think Oregon could beat Wisconsin. You know, New Mexico State could beat Auburn and ruin Eli's brand. He's got Auburn, and there's a lot of talk there that Auburn, you know, dumped it all at the SEC tournament. They've got to fly across the country. They play an early game. So there's that.
I think we're calling him Eli.
Eli?
Yeah, instead of Eli.
I like when they use the Simba music. I was telling him, so I'm in the car listening. He was on another show on the station, and they're introing him with the Simba music, and my kid's in the back, like, bopping her head.
I don't think he likes that
song,
nickname, though.
Kicking my chair, and I'm like, this is great.
Doesn't like being called that.
You mean people making fun of your big ears? You think that you wouldn't like that?
No, I mean, it's...
Oh, is that what it is? I thought it was like he was, like, growing up, that he was the king.
Might be both.
Okay.
I doubt it's that, Dustin.
So often we expect that we just throw up these questions and they can be formed anyway or asked anyway, and we just expect responses.
With 26 points and 13 assists in a victory without Zach LaVine or Otto Porter Jr., did Chris Dunn remind you he can be good enough to be part of the Bulls core, or just reinforce how inconsistent he is? Did Dunn foil the Bulls' plan to lose on Wednesday?
I think he foiled the Bulls' fans' hopes that the Bulls would lose, because you look at the Cavaliers and they upset the Bucks, and you thought, okay, here's an opportunity. You can move within a half game of the Cavs and get within that 1.5% to close the gap there. But the 14%ers were disappointed last night because Chris Dunn decided that he was going to take over. And he did take over. 8 points in overtime, 26 points season high. 13 assists, and he was looking for his shot. He was playing with confidence. He did not have Otto Porter Jr. He did not have Zach LaVine, and it didn't matter. He was more aggressive. I know Markkanen was great. That was nice to see. He hit a big three, huge three for the Bulls. And when Chris Dunn plays like that, you're like, okay, now we get it. Now we understand what they were looking for at the beginning of the year and in previous years, what made him a guy they identified as a core piece. But unfortunately, I do think it reinforced how inconsistent he has been. Maybe he can recapture that. Maybe he can get past that. I don't know the Bulls are going to give them the chance, because if they don't get Zion Williamson, and I think even if they do get the top overall pick, they're going to go after a veteran free agent point guard, and he's going to be the guy that they envision as the starter. If they don't get Zion and they draft a point guard like Ja Morant, who could be exciting, he's going to probably be the guy they're grooming for the future. So I think Chris Dunn's future with the Bulls might be the leader of that second unit, which could be a very good role for him, because as we saw last night, when he's on, he's dangerous.
I think it reminded me of how inconsistent he is, because this is a guy that, you know, I get it, he can't shoot, but he can't make a layup. I mean, this is a guy, when he goes off the boil, it is it's just something to behold. You marvel at how a guy got into the league when he can't finish at the rim. It's just bizarre to watch sometimes. So I think it underscores the inconsistency that has sort of damned him since he came into the league, and certainly since the trade was made and he came to Chicago. Look, when they didn't lose to Phoenix, when that happened, that pretty much has just got me locked in the idea that they're going to finish fourth, and I'm not going to get upset about it. I've kind of accepted that a while ago, and then I thought, oh my God, they could get back into this with Phoenix, and then you see Cleveland win, and then the Bulls win again. So I'm not getting on that roller coaster. I've locked into fourth. If they end up at fifth somehow, then you'll hear language. But but fourth, I've wrapped my mind around.
Find
so
the
it's
dump
okay.
button.
That's right.
Yeah, I give up on that 1.5% or whatever it is for the 10th time when they won in Phoenix the other day. Now, it is worth noting that when LaVine is out of the lineup in 9 games, Dunn is averaging 17 points and 7 assists per game, and he's shooting 49%. But no, we've seen enough with Dunn. He's not going to be part of the core. He just turned, 25 years old now. I don't see him turning the corner very soon. So nothing changed my mind last night. Washington, I mean, just two awful defenses
so
on the
bad.
Court last night. Both teams so bad. It was a rough watch.
You know, I think that Chris Dunn is definitely an NBA player. I think he's got a role on a good team. I don't think that's as a starting point guard. I think if you want to expand the core to include, you know, key reserves, I think he could be a guy that could be a backup point guard on a good team. But I think the ship has definitely sailed in terms of him being a key piece or a starter or a superstar or anything like that. He's far too inconsistent. I mean, guys like Chris Dunn, there are a lot of them in the league, and almost anybody in the NBA can have a great game every now and then. The key is, though, and the difference between Chris Dunn and actual superstars is being able to be consistent and put good runs together like that and establish some sort of continuity. But it's just been too much start stop with him, and all the injuries haven't really helped either. So I think Chris Dunn, like I said, if he's a backup and the Bulls draft Ja Morant, for instance, and Chris Dunn's your backup point guard, I'm fine with that. But him as a starter, as a star, all-star, anything like that, I don't think so.
Join Coach Fitz and the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host the Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Of course, I'm not happy they won that game last night. How in the world did they win that game? If you were a Washington Wizards fan, I mean, what in the wide world of sports? That's ridiculous that they won that game last night. But to answer the question, Dunn is like instant offense with the second unit, assuming they do something well in the draft or well in free agency. I think it makes total sense. Fine. I don't want him to be the starting point guard of the Chicago Bulls, but if he's like the first guy off the bench, we give the starters a break, he's going to the hole, sure, why not?
You know, that's a good question.
What does a report that the Bears tried to sign Adrian Peterson mean for the future of Jordan Howard? Is his fate already sealed, and will he be traded before the NFL draft?
Yeah, you know, his fate is clearly sealed. I think the timing of the trade is the only curiosity left, how they get rid of him. I have said before that I would try to keep him into next year because I think that that's just a better way of doing business. I think that he might be able to help you a little bit, and certainly it's all about winning and trying to figure out a way to make sure that that continues for the Chicago Bears. So I would be a little bit miffed, I think, if they gave him up for nothing, which would be what would happen around the draft. There's just not much value for players when you have the opportunity to get someone. It's not until the start of the season where teams realize that what they do or do not have. People fall in love with their draft picks. It's really hard to get a good deal going around draft time. So I think his fate's sealed. I think he's gone. I hope they wait till the trade deadline next year because they could use the cover as well. I got to be honest with you. When I read that report, Albert Breer, I thought immediately of you, Dustin, because Dustin has said that if Adrian Peterson were to be brought to Chicago, he would no longer be a Bear fan, which I think would be super difficult for him. So that's one of the reasons that I submitted this question. not as a way of chiding him, but just the fact that they were as close as apparently they were.
I don't know how Adrian Peterson would have fit in this offense as much as he has accomplished throughout his career. I don't think at this stage of his career. I know he had 1,000 yards last year. I know he still has a little bit left in the tank, but the way that they went in terms of pursuing Mike Davis makes a lot more sense for the type of running back that Matt Nagy tends to favor. Certainly, you know they kicked the tires on Mark Ingram too. They kicked the tires on Adrian Peterson. They considered probably a lot of guys. I don't know how close they came to signing any of them. From what you hear, you talk to people, Mike Davis was a guy they really liked, and we'll have to wait and see. As for Jordan Howard, nothing really has changed, I believe. I think that they're going to regret if they just unload him and dump him because they're going to find out that maybe there is a use for him. Maybe they can dump him during the draft if they get a team that really is motivated to give up something. But you're right, Mully. You keep a guy. This is football. And if your culture is as good as everybody says that it is, it can absorb any sort of unhappiness that Jordan Howard may feel going to Bourbonnais as your third running back. And the chemistry issue isn't as big of a concern because you have other people who are happy to be there and you have a winning team and it's headed in the right direction. So Jordan Howard on the roster is not a problem. Actually, it's a luxury. So if he's your third running back, that's a pretty good stable. And I that would be the best move they could make is wait until the trade deadline and wait for your better offer for a team that needs a running back. And if you don't get rid of him at the trade deadline, hold on to him because you know what? You might need him in December.
It certainly feels like his fate is already sealed. And even before this report that Jordan Howard is on his way out of town, it's just a matter of when it's going to happen, what are they going to get in return. So what are the Bears thinking? Are they thinking that veteran running backs like Ingram or Peterson would be the same production as you would get out of Jordan Howard for 1 year? And so you would move him, sign another guy, so then you add maybe a fifth possibly a fourth-round draft pick, probably not a fourth, though. I guess that's their only thinking. But as far as Adrian Peterson goes, he had a few big games. Yeah, it was 1,000 yards, but it was a few good games. A typical 12th-year running back. What happens? He had a hot start, and then he trailed as the season went on. But it certainly feels like he's on his way out of town, and I'll say he will be traded before the draft.
He'll definitely be gone before next season. I don't know if it's before the draft, right after the draft, training camp, whatever it is, but he's not going to be on the Bears next season. I think there's so much smoke around this that there's definitely going to be some fire at some point. They've already brought in one running back. I expect them possibly to either draft or sign another one that doesn't get drafted. In regard to Adrian Peterson, I mean, that's personal stuff aside. I mean, the guy's, not a good person. And he's also like older than Methuselah, so I don't know what he would
34
really.
34, and he got a 2 year deal,
yeah,
right?
In 34 in NFL years is unbelievable.
NFL running back years,
NFL
that's
running
even
back
worse.
Years, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know what he would offer. He's not exactly a dynamic player, not exactly a guy who's known for his pass catching ability out of the backfield. It's just, I don't know. Was Albert Breer, was that report?
Yes.
Okay, that's great.
La 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 la. I can't. I just can't go down. No. If you know me and you, I would pack up all of my bear stuff. I would put it in a box, and I might set it on fire, or I'd send it to Ethiopia or whoever needs stuff right now. Like, the only team that I wear gear of every Sunday is Bears. Like, I wear a Bears t-shirt or a Bears, like, kind of pullover type thing. Like, that
just,
would
just to, like, sit at home and watch the game? You just put it on and then sit in your living room?
In my basement. Okay. By myself, usually. Or I go over to Diddy's down the street, sit in the garage. I have, like, one Bud Light during the whole game, like, sip a Bud Light. You know how hard that is? And take notes. I'm like the dork with my little notebook taking notes and texting you guys. Make sure we pull this. Listen to what Thayer said about this.
Yeah, I love it.
You guys love it. But I do that in Bears gear. It'd be absolutely ridiculous. I don't know. How is he better? How is he better than Jordan Howard? Explain that one to me. I mean, there's got to be more to this, right? They must be. He must be a real pain in the backside, Jordan Howard. They must be so upset about that he took all his Bears image and Bears branding off of Instagram at some point last year. This makes absolutely no sense. None.
This contract year.
At 34, Adrian Peterson probably is a little more explosive at times than Jordan Howard.
Explosive, great. You know who's more explosive? Tariq Cohen. That's just more explosive. You don't need explosive. He's there to get 2 yards. He's there in the winter time. He's there so you don't have to quarterback sneak Mitch Trubisky. Okay, that's why Jordan Howard's there. And again, basically he's a minimum wage player for NFL standards. I don't know. Thank goodness this didn't happen.
I knew that was coming. All right, there you go.
You asked for that.
Well, I was surprised because I know that his name was one that came up. And
but here's the other thing. You know, we're talking about Cromartie. Who's the guy on the Chiefs right now, the wide receiver, scat backy guy?
Tyreek Hill.
Who allegedly broke his kid's arm.
Yeah, right? That is just
he should be
worst.
Out of the league. But why did did that piece of crap running back that plays for that
Kareem
bigoted
Hunt.
Name franchise in Washington, how does he get off scot-free for showing up once a year to discipline his child who's in a car seat? He's buckled in his car seat and the guy's slapping him around because he didn't handle the Xbox controller right, allegedly. Okay? How does that get a free pass? Give me a break.
I don't think it was a free pass. I think they did.
Really? I never saw one thing about anybody saying he should be out of the league. Never once did I see
that. He was suspended for almost a whole season.
Yeah.
Not for that?
Yes, he was.
No, he was not.
Adrian Peterson was, yeah, he did. Can you look that up? It was definitely.
Yeah, it was 2014.
Yeah.
He was suspended for the rest of the season in November. So,
right.
Majority of a year.
What? He was disciplined.
He was disciplned.
Yeah. Okay.
I never heard anybody say to kick him out of the league.
I don't know. There was a lot of conversation about people kicking him out of the league.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk.
That was very unsettling. And
this is worse. The Tyreek Hill story.
That sounds pretty bad.
It's awful. It's just awful.
It's about
a dozen incidents with that guy at this
point.
That's
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's not one thing.
I'm fine throwing his rear end out of the league, and Adrian Peterson can carry his bags right behind him.
That is the 5 at 5, 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.